This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
I could see the Carolina Panthers going quarterback at number 7. All that's been talked about. Will Carolina move up and take Tua or Burrow? I'd be more surprised if they moved up and took a quarterback than if they stayed in place and liked either Justin Herbert out of Oregon or Jordan Love out of Utah State. I think that is a very realistic path. Now, what does that mean for Cam Newton? Some would say, if you're taking a quarterback in the first round, that is it for Cam. What I would say is, why? Like, if Cam Newton only has 1 year left on his contract, and Cam is trying to earn himself a new contract, the only way he does that in Charlotte or anywhere else he plays is by proving that he's healthy on the field and playing well. You could do that with Joe Brady. You could do that with Christian McCaffrey on the roster. $19 billion isn't that much of a cap hit. So if Carolina keeps Cam Newton and drafts either a Herbert or Love number 7 overall, that can work in the interim. Give me the reason why it can't. On Twitter at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600 being the phone number. The reason why Carolina would be picking between Herbert or Love, Tua's not going to be there. Burrow's not going to be there. They won't trade up, I don't think. I think it would be a mistake to do that because draft capital is far too valuable when you're missing as many pieces as Carolina is. You have 7 of your 14 free agents being defensive linemen. You're maybe only going to bring back one of those players, Mario Addison, according to Jordan Rodriguez and Joe Person from The Athletic, likely going to be the one they pursue on a team-friendly deal coming back. You're going to be losing maybe a wide receiver. You lost Luke Kuechly already with the surprise retirement. You parted ways with Greg Olsen. So there are a lot of needs for Carolina. But the main reason why I'd have no issue whatsoever with Carolina picking Herbert or Love number 7, if you believe he's a franchise guy, if Marty Herney believes that, if David Tepper believes that, if Matt Rhule believes that, if Joe Brady believes that, you take him. That simple. I don't care what the mock drafts say. I don't care if someone says, oh, there's a better chance he would fall to you in the second round than somebody taking him that high in Love's case. Oh, you could have just traded up late in the first round and got him and drafted a better player at the number 7 pick. Remember the Giants? They picked Daniel Jones last year. You could criticize it and say they made a mistake, but their mistake was in evaluation, not in selecting Jones number 6. I've always defended Gettleman on that. The day after the pick, I defended the philosophical approach, the Giants thinking they had a franchise guy in Jones and picking him there. You could criticize the evaluation, how they arrive at the place, Daniel Jones as a franchise quarterback, or think that Dwayne Haskins was a better pick than Jones is, even though after 1 year, I'd probably say Jones over Haskins right now. Philosophically, though, I can't knock it. Dave Gettleman believed Daniel Jones was a franchise guy. So, with him believing that, you can't wait for the second round. You can't wait, in their case, to number 18. You pick the quarterback. Out of Love and Herbert, I'd prefer Love. The biggest knock on him as a prospect, two things actually. Where he went to school and how he performed his senior year. Wake fans know this. He played at Utah State. The Deacs opened up with the Aggies, and Utah State, they showed out. They probably should have won the game. Wake Forest needed to get a stop on a 3rd and 5 around midfield and go the length of the field, score a touchdown, and get a stop, an interception of Love, in order to win that game. That's exactly what they did. Jordan Love's sophomore season, He had 32 touchdowns, 6 picks. Threw 3,500 yards of offense. He was awesome. Last year, 20 touchdowns, 17 picks. Now, you could be really concerned about that, and I would understand that. However, rather than just flatly saying this guy isn't awesome because of the stats, I'm a person who likes to dive into the why. Why did Love's numbers go down? The simple answer to the question is change of coaching. This was the reason why I thought Wake was going to beat Utah State in the opener. This is the reason why I thought the idea of Love being a dark horse Heisman candidate, somebody to watch for all throughout the years, that the season was a little bit overblown. You don't get great head coaches who grow on trees at places like Utah State. The same way you don't get those often at Appalachian State, even though the Mountaineers have been blessed with Jerry Moore passing things off to Scott Satterfield, and then him passing things off to Elijah Drinkwitz, having a great year. He goes off to Missouri, and you're hoping the same thing happens with Sean Clark. East Carolina, like, you get Skip Holtz, it's followed by Ruffin McNeil, you get a little bit too greedy, and you realize, oh wait, this place isn't so attractive as I thought it was going to be. A Scotty Montgomery happens, and they're trying to pick up the pieces in Greenville, America. Same thing at Utah State. You have this transcendent prospect, a guy who's quarterback, a first-round pick, and he's surrounded with a really good coach. Matt Wells, he left Utah State to go to Texas Tech, replaced Cliff Kingsbury last year. They replaced him with Gary Anderson, unproven college coach. He had a tough time at Wisconsin. I think he did some things at Oregon State before he ended up at Utah State. It just wasn't a home run hire by any means. That's where I go when I look at the productivity going down. There's a reason for that. Now, does Carolina have good coaching to elevate his play? I think so. If Joe Brady, from Joe Burrow's average first season at LSU, can elevate him to 60 touchdown passes and a national championship winning team and a Heisman winning quarterback campaign season, if he can do that there, why am I led to believe Jordan Love can't do that, transitioning from college to the NFL? Joe Brady, great offensive mind. I love the idea of a guy who's being compared to Pat Mahomes working with Brady, who was at LSU with Joe Burrow. Like, I feel like the upside might be even higher with Love versus Burrow. And you don't have to trade away any capital to get this kid? Like, if he's there at 7 and Carolina takes him, what is your thought today, Carolina Panther fans? On Twitter, at SportsUpTriad, 336-777-1600, being the phone number. I want to move things to Wake Forest basketball, which lost to North Carolina last night, but that's not very fair to say. Just because North Carolina was the winner doesn't mean Wake Forest was the loser. Wake Forest, I thought, was really good offensively. They pumped a lot of threes in there. It was a great effort, but North Carolina was better. North Carolina was the story. Wake Forest was not. But whenever I have to make a tough decision in my life, I rely on smart, qualified people to gather information so I can make the most informed choice. That way, I can have informed opinions. I could be on a radio microphone such as this one and telling you something that is backed up by people in the college basketball and NBA community. The upcoming decision Wake Forest Athletic Director John Curry has to make on Danny Manning, it is an easy one. I don't envy him at all for having to make it, but after speaking to several college basketball contacts, some folks in the NBA, I believe it's time for a head coaching change. This team, I get it's been improved this year. There's no question about it. And I understand some of the pushback people might have on this. Why would you break up something that looks like might be good next year? Wake Forest's roster, when you look at it, Jacoby Neath, point guard, Chandi Brown, shooting guard. Isaiah Musius playing the three. Odi Aguama the four. Olivier Saar the five. Injured Sunday Okeke and Tariq Ingram back. You have this three-star point guard out of Chicago, Watson, coming in, who a lot of people seem to like. Spot shooters, Ishmael Massoud. You have Michael Wynn, Sharon Wright, all these players who could maybe step in and play for you. This might be the most talented team Danny's had. Even if that's the case, how are you convinced Danny's going to maximize the talent when, with John Collins his first year, Wake went 11-20? And the year they went to the tournament, still finished 10th in the ACC and lost in the first four. Jalen Horde, five-star player, came into Winston-Salem. Wake finished 11-20 last year. I'm not sold next year's team's going to make the tournament. So what exactly should the standard be? The buyout. That's an obvious thing to talk about. It's expensive. But how expensive are the losses? How expensive are the losses of fans? The attendance figures. The fact that, according to Connor O'Neill from the Winston-Salem Journal, does a great job covering the Deacs, for the first time in the history of the Joel Coliseum, they've averaged more empty seats than filled seats of the 14,000 in Winston. That has to cost something. The vibe, the hope, the optimism of the people that are left at Joel Coliseum. That has to mean something. This is John Curry's chance to make his mark. David Glenn was talking about this with us on yesterday's show. This is somebody I see to be very respected, covered the ACC for 3 decades plus. I asked him about Danny Manning's case, and this is what he said.
If I were the athletic director or the university president at Wake Forest, I would pull a plug on this operation. I've been around a long time, and when you have 5 losing seasons in your first 6 years, as Danny has had, it becomes unbelievably difficult to turn things around for a lot of different reasons.
This is what John Curry was brought here to do. Not specifically fire Danny Manning, but to hire high-quality coaches if need be. He did so when a popular Frank Martin was let go in K-State, at K-State in Manhattan, Kansas. He replaced him with a guy who took K-State to the Elite Eight in Bruce Weber. Accomplished coach. Fundraising. That's one of his calling cards. Funds are going to be necessary to pay for a buyout. So Curry's the type of guy who could take this on, but he's also the guy who understands where Wake basketball should be. It's one of the biggest reasons why I thought it was a home run hire to bring Curry in. He understands Wake Forest athletics more than anybody. He was a student here. He worked under Ron Wellman. He gets it. And I think he gets what Wake basketball should be and what it's not right now. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Let's go to Chris in Greensboro, who wants in on the Panthers quarterback situation, Cam Newton, what they should do in the draft. I propose, hey, I'm not saying they should take a quarterback at 7, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. I'd have no issue if it's Jordan Love or Justin Herbert. If the Panthers believe that's a franchise-quality guy, I'd have an issue if they trade up and take away draft capital for a Tua or a Burrow. Chris, what do you think about Cam and the quarterback prospects the Panthers are looking at?
Yeah, I think as far as the draft is concerned, I'm a huge Panthers fan. I hear arguments on both sides like, oh, Cam stinks. He'll never be healthy again. Let's get rid of him. I hear other people say he's our quarterback. You know, let's stick with him. The reality is if somebody like a generational type talent could fall to you at 7, I think you'd take him. You know, before Tua got hurt, a lot of people thought he could be a number one overall pick based on his talent and ability level. So if Tua falls to you at 7, I like Cam, but I'd be okay with him taking him, especially because Tua has said he'd be willing to sit for a while and get healthy. And then you have a situation where if Cam plays good, you can either trade Cam or trade Tua and then maybe get something in return.
Well, let me ask you a question. Tua, if he doesn't fall, I don't think he's going to fall that far. Tua or Burrow, obviously. So my question's this. Would you be okay if it's Love or Herbert at 7, who some might view to be a reach at that spot?
No. No, that would make me sick to my stomach because they already have a project on the roster in Will Greer, and I don't see Love being much more than a project. Herbert maybe, you know. But if Tua's not there, I say you take somebody that can help you now, maybe Derek Brown or maybe Isaiah Simmons.
And really quickly, second question I have for you, very quickly, if the Panthers do draft a quarterback, would you be all right with Cam Newton still being on the roster as that quarterback develops? Tua, Herbert, Love, or whoever?
Yeah, I think you keep Cam this year for 2020 no matter what. If he's terrible, you let him go. It's the end of his contract. If he gets good again, then the Panthers look like geniuses.
All right, thanks for the call, Chris. You are listening to WSGS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WMFR High Point, WPCM Burlington. Those signals make an up sports hub triad.
Josh Graham loves to talk sports. He also loves the way his new jeans highlight his man curves.
Ooh, hot.
Oh, hot. Yeah, right. That's hot.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
One thing that really has upset the fans is you cheat, you win a championship, there is no suspension, and then there's no remorse. And the last one, I think, is probably the worst one, because people want to see remorse. They want a real, authentic apology, and they have not received that thus far.
If you could go back in time 5 years ago to 2015 you, what would you find most bizarre about 2020? Maybe Donald Trump from The Apprentice being the president of the United States? The fact that in the last 5 years, the Cleveland Cavaliers, yes, the city of Cleveland, and the Chicago Cubs have won championships? Virginia basketball maybe getting it done. Or is it Alex Rodriguez is Major League Baseball's lead analyst on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball on the studio for the World Series for Fox? He's beloved. He's a big star. People are going to him for his opinions. Yes, even on the cheating Houston Astros. What would 2015 you say about that? Because to me, that's one of the craziest things that's happened the last 5 years. This Alex Rodriguez progression from being the most hated athlete in America, not a long time ago, 5-6 years ago, he missed the entire 2014 season, suspended the entire year. It's the biggest punishment Major League Baseball's ever given an individual player. He lost $35 million that year. He played for the Yankees. He cheated. He was the most hated athlete in a time where we cared about baseball a lot more, even 5 years ago. And today, he is one of the faces of the sport. How messed up is baseball today? Athletes that never said interesting things, they're now criticizing the commissioner, saying he's doing a poor job. One of the players saying he's a joke. Trevor Bauer, that guy who said that, is giving away his pitches intentionally in spring training games to send a message. And you got the guy who is seen to be your biggest cheater, who stormed out of a meeting with the commissioner to go on Michael Kay's radio show and yell and disperse lies. That guy is the calming voice of reason telling us what the Houston Astros should do. How bat bleep crazy is that? Wes Durham going to join us in 15 minutes. On top of that, there is a sterling matchup between Sawyer Dillon, our assistant producer, about to go down with Joel Berry, the former Tar Heel. We got the billing of this. We're going to get that in about 5 or 6 minutes. Tell you what's happened recently on that. But here's more from Alex Rodriguez on that ESPN spring training broadcast from yesterday.
And I can just tell you this, Matty, from a guy who has made, you know, as many mistakes as anybody on the biggest stage, I served the longest suspension in Major League Baseball history. Mm. You know, it cost me well over $35 million. And you know what? I deserved that. And as a result, I came back. I owned it after acting like a buffoon for a long time. I had my apologies, and then I went dark. And I wanted my next move to be contrite, but I also wanted to go out and play good baseball and change my narrative. And the way you change your narrative is you have to be accountable. You've earned all this negative talk. You've earned whatever comes your way, including whether it's hit by a pitch or negative press. You have divorced yourself from having the ability to protect yourself.
I wish 2015 A-Rod agreed with that advice. Like, he acknowledged a period where he was accountable and then went dark and tried to reshape his narrative. What was that all about? When did A-Rod own, take into account everything he did? He denied it all the way through. Screwball is a documentary that Billy Corbin did. And it's the closest a sports documentary has come to mockumentary, like something Andy Samberg would do for HBO or Saturday Night Live. It's the closest thing a documentary has ever come to comedy, pure comedy. And if you haven't seen it, I strongly suggest you watch it. A-Rod was a child. He was just narcissistic. He was not apologetic. Like he said, he was acting like a buffoon. This was the most honest A-Rod was. And you knew something like this was coming. Because I thought about this 3 or 4 weeks ago. Okay, everybody has spoken about this. You got Kirkshin out there, Buster Olney out there. A bunch of people criticizing the commissioner. All the players are out here criticizing the commissioner. The only person who I haven't heard an opinion from is Alex Rodriguez. Smart play on his part. If you're seen to be one of the greatest cheaters in the sport, maybe in all of sports, maybe sit that one out until you're actually obligated to talk about it because you are broadcasting games for ESPN. You're actually broadcasting the sport. So good on A-Rod. He's handled this about as well as anybody. So I think even more than the Astro stuff, which is obvious, they weren't apologetic, and A-Rod is absolutely right with everything he's saying there, I'm more interested in what he represents, the person who's saying these things, than the stuff that we can already acknowledge to be true, that the Astros really messed this up from a PR standpoint. A-Rod has been picture perfect. Stay away from it until you absolutely have to talk about it. Then say that you did a lot of ownership-related things that you didn't actually did. Call yourself a buffoon. Say you deserved a $35 million fine and being suspended an entire year when probably you deserve more than that. Probably you don't deserve the job that you're sitting in right now. And you can be applauded and cheered as somebody who has been given a second chance because we love that. We love that in American culture, not just sports, but everywhere. We love second chances. We love giving it to people. And what has A-Rod done to show his growth? To show he has grown as a person? He married J-Lo. That's it, Robert. If you want to heal your image, Lance Armstrong, take notes. If you want to heal your image, Donald Sterling, if you want to heal your image, Jennifer Lopez is the key. Because we love J-Lo so much, and we saw it during the Super Bowl halftime show, that we'll say, I don't care. She's 50. She's still great, and I love her. She's Jenny from the block. Oh, A-Rod, he can't be so bad because J-Lo likes him. That's the key. That's the key to healing your image. Is Shakira single, or is she still dating that soccer player who used to play for Real Madrid, that Piqué fella? Because maybe that's the way that you could get back in the positive way of back in the positive court of public opinion, Lance Armstrong. Maybe. This is just bizarre. And A-Rod is this guy today. On Twitter at SportsUpTriad, 336-777-1600. Let's get to Joel Berry's upcoming battle with our assistant producer, Sawyer Dillon, who's not in today. He's preparing for his big matchup on Monday in studio with the Greensboro Swarms, Joel Berry, former Tar Heel great, who was on the show with us earlier. And Sawyer is getting set to play in NBA 2K, Joel. There's some trash talk that's already been thrown out there. Like, Sawyer, he sent in this sound just to play for Joel earlier.
Hey, what's up, Joel? Looking forward to our game on Monday. I just have one quick question, though. What should the mercy rule be? Because, like, I know if you're down by, like, 25 or 30 in, like, the third quarter, we might want to call it. But it's up to you. I mean, I can run up the score on you, or we can just call it at 20, 15, 10, whatever you're thinking. Also, are we doing three random teams, or are we picking our teams? That's the only other thing I need to know before I get the dub on Monday.
Do we have Joel's response to this? Because,
yes.
My goodness, he's so bad at talking trash.
Are we going to, like, do randoms? Are you going to do, like, dinner after we get done playing?
He should have stuck to them after the mercy rule thing.
Do you want to borrow my gaming chair?
Like, the mercy rule thing, that was good.
What was that about? Yeah, the mercy rule was good. But
that was in the right vein.
Also, I had a question about if you were single, because my sister needs a boyfriend. Also, like, remember when you were put into the rafters last month in Chapel Hill? Like, that was cool. Yeah, anyway, man, you're going down, bro. Here's how Joel responded.
Oh, man. I see. He's being a little cocky right now. So, but you know what? That's good. I like the confidence. So, I'm going to let him have it. But, and then we can follow up on those questions when we see each other in person. But I love the confidence. That'll make me come and play a little bit harder. So,
things are getting heated. Oh, my God. It's going to be blood sport. Monday. NBA 2K.
Thunderdome.
Sawyer versus Joel Berry in studio. Make sure you're listening next week. Pay-per-view. No, not pay-per-view.
Yeah, just Don King this whole thing.
This is going to be fantastic. I hope it's a good game that they play. We're going to set everything up in the studio, and it's going to be great. And B-Dot, he's going to be our hype man on this. I don't want to call him Don King. So I feel like that would be an insult.
That would be an insult to be Don.
Yeah.
I could kind of spike my hair up or poof my hair up and do like a Don King thing.
The idea that Joel Berry isn't going to talk trash is ridiculous. Like, B-Dot showed me some videos of him going after some dude at Miami. Like, it's on video. He also said that Jose Alvarado talked some smack, said he was disrespectful. If you missed that interview, find that on iTunes, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. That's good stuff from Joel Berry. It'll be up in a little bit. One of the leading voices of the ACC Network is Wes Durham. He will join the show next on The Drive. Wes Durham, who you know from Packer in Durham on the ACC Network, is now in with us. And Wes, when it comes to North Carolina's chances in Greensboro next week, your teammate Brian Ives, I was in touch with him last night.
Oh, wait, whoa, hold on a second. Wait a second. When you start talking about Brian Ives in Carolina, you have to remember now he's silly for Cocoa Puffs over Carolina.
That's true. Okay? He passed along these notes to me.
When you talk Carolina with Brian Ives, you have to make sure you're getting the flag lowered, as I like to say. You got to lower that flag a little bit. It's like talking to Eric McClain about Clemson. You got to lower that flag a touch.
I think that further emphasizes what I'm about to say, though, because it might not be the most positive thing.
Right.
When you look at the stats, and he's a big stat and info guy.
Yes, he is. He's very good.
The only team that has gone from playing on the first day to making it to the championship game.
I know who it is.
You want to tell me?
1997 NC State.
2007 NC State.
Well, 2007 NC State.
In the 12-team field.
Yeah, that was a 12-team field.
Right. 97 NC State did it as well. I was going to get that far.
2007, 10 years later, was Sidney Lowe. They did it in Tampa, lost to Carolina.
That's right.
And Duke is the only team to go from Wednesday to play in the championship and win it.
Yes. Duke, Tatum, Kennard, and company.
Yeah, Brian
four
needs,
wins in 4 days.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, don't ever forget. And Jason Tatum should have still been the MVP.
Yeah, so Wes Durham, he is as sharp as they come, but I use that to set things out. I can't rule Carolina out yet, can you?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, you're right. You can't rule them out because here's the deal. They're going to have a pretty good house Tuesday night. If they end up in the 7 o'clock game, which is now the second of the two, right? If they end up in the 7 o'clock game in Greensboro on Tuesday night against whoever, they're going to have the crowd because regardless of what happens Saturday night, Josh, the Carolina fans are back on board now. They're not, you know, shunning their eyes at this deal. They're looking at what this potentially could be. And, you know, they're figuring, well, we've been through all the hardships. Maybe we get some breaks here. So, yeah, I think Carolina is dangerous. I thought we hit it on the head this morning in our visit with Seth Greenberg on Packer and Durham. I thought Carolina is the most dangerous team because of the combination of Anthony and Brooks. And if Brandon Robinson's going to score, or Leaky Black or Christian Keeler, whoever the third guy is, I would tell you that then the most dangerous team is Virginia, at least going to the weekend at this point. Or maybe with tonight to go and then the weekend.
I didn't get this stat from Ives, but I think it's significant as well. For me, the biggest difference for North Carolina is obviously health. When you consider that Cole Anthony, Brandon Robinson, and Garrison Brooks all together have started 8 games this year. That's it. And North Carolina is 5-3 in those games. And we're not talking about any scrubs in those 8. 7 of the 8 have winning records. All of them are in power conferences. North Carolina 5-3, including the last 3 that they've won here. That seems to be the biggest difference. But I've heard others saying that the relief of finally closing out an opponent late, NC State, in that game a little over a week ago, that's been the elevation point for North Carolina going from where they were to where they are now. What do you view as the biggest difference for the Tar Heels?
Well, the old Roy statement of the ball's going in the basket, now that's one thing. and I love that statement, by the way. The thing for me, in all honesty, is that I think there's a little bit more consistency and chemistry. Now, you said 8 games, and does that include last night when they did the senior deal or not?
It includes last night.
Okay, yeah. So it should. I mean, because that's technically what the starting lineup would have been.
Right.
I look at Carolina as twofold. One, they're scoring the ball. I think I heard Jones say last night on the air they had a 50-point second half against Georgia Tech, but now they've had back-to-back 50-point second halves, 50 or more, in Syracuse and Wake Forest. And to be honest with you, I think that's the kind of Carolina you'll need to see. Not that they have to have a 50-point half, but they need to be an 80-point team. I mean, that's what we kind of kept waiting on for a month or so, right? Well, they were having a hard time getting to 80. And honestly, I believe that they need to get to 80 in order to have a chance to win, especially once we get to the tournament format, because if they were to go through – and they went through some droughts last night in the first half again – in watching the tape here this morning, they've had to fight through that every ball game. They need to be able to get away from that, though, in order to be successful in Greensboro next week.
West Durham is on Twitter at West Durham. Watch Packer and Durham every morning on the ACC network. On the other end of things, Wake Forest, they lose it. And last year after the season, you know something's up when you're having press conferences to say that a coach is staying. And that's what happened when Ron Wellman, his final decision as the director of athletics at Wake, said that Danny was going to come back for his 6th year. So now, of course, John Curry is now the AD, and he's going to have to make a call one way or the other on Danny Manning. How difficult of a decision do you think this is?
I think it's a very difficult decision because I'm not sure that you've got a – and look, and you know this because you're familiar that, you know, I have great respect for both Ron Wellman and John Curry. John has become a friend, you know, and he and my brother were in high school together in Chapel Hill, and I have great respect for what he did at Kansas State and also at Tennessee, even though I thought that was a bad situation ultimately for him and a tough spot for him, controlled by a lot of outside interest. I think what John will do will be the smart decision for Wake Forest on a lot of levels. Number one, everybody who wants a change has to understand kind of where it all fits. And sometimes, Josh, that's the toughest part here. And having worked on a campus for almost, well, over 20 years, if you count the 3 schools, 4 schools I work for, 18 at Georgia Tech, I can tell you these decisions, you can't enter into them lightly. First of all, you have to understand the financials on both ends. Not only saying goodbye to a coach, but bringing a new coach in. You know, those things don't come with some discount coupon, right? I mean, you have to bring a coach in, you have to bring a staff, you have to set the infrastructure, there are going to be position changes all over the place, that kind of thing. So, and I'm not defending one way or the other here, I'm just looking at the perspective of the concept or the transaction. Second is this, did Wake show improvement this year?
There's no question.
Yeah, and look, and I think they're showing improvement with one senior who's playing meaningful minutes, and that is, and that's Brandon Childress. Do you see a way or a path next year for Wake to be better? I do. I see a path clearly built around a guy who's going to be a senior in, what, Olivier Saar?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have Shaundi Brown as a senior. You're going to have Jacoby Neath as a sophomore. You're going to have Ishmael Massoud as a sophomore. You're going to have Isaiah Musius as a sophomore junior, I guess, junior,
mm-hmm.
on that roster next year. I'm sure they've done a decent job recruiting where there'll be some depth. So you're really looking at maybe one or two guys having to play meaningful minutes that are freshmen or sophomores. Guess what? That's a chance to be in the middle of what I think is going to be an incredibly productive league. I think this league is going to be so much better on the whole, 1 to 15 next year, that it's scary. It's going to be real scary, to be honest with you, because I just look at some of these teams and say to myself, you know, Wake Forest is one of those teams. Georgia Tech is going to be better, even losing James Banks. You know, Wake could be one of the faster rises. I think Pittsburgh will be much improved next year over this year, and they've really struggled late. But I'm excited about where ACC basketball will be on the whole next year, and some of that involves Wake Forest.
Let's not get too far down the road, though. You're going to be on the call Friday mm-hmm. night, Wake Forest at NC State. What do you imagine the energy in that place is going to feel like Friday night?
Well, I think it's going to be one that's pretty interesting because, let's be honest, NC State now has to win. And they got to win more than just Friday night.
And Danny Manning might be feeling like, hey, a win against NC State could really further my case here. Hey, beating everybody in the ACC Big Four in 1 year?
Sure. No question. And you remember this. The first game wasn't that far apart. The first game, the day of the ACC football championship game, I remember sitting watching the game at the Fan Fest in Charlotte because we were going to do a Packer and Durham show behind it. And I remember Jericho Helms obviously getting hurt in the moments there. But the game was only one or two possessions, what, under 2 minutes to go?
Tight
right?
game.
I mean, it was relatively close game. And I'm expecting the same thing. It was funny. I was exchanging texts with Paul Biancardi, who's doing the ball game with me. I expect it to be a very intense game for 40 minutes. Both teams want to get out and run. And NC State has gotten to a point now where I think they are okay defensively, but they're using the pressure just to turn it over. They're not defending you as much as they're attacking you to see if you can give the ball up, you know? And so I'm of the belief now that the game will be 40 minutes of grind. It'll be the old Nolan Richardson 40 minutes of hell is what it's going to be. I mean, it's both teams, because you know this, both teams want to go end-to-end. They want to play this thing at 94 feet. They want to play it at the top of the gearbox. And I think that's what we're going to get Friday night. So it could be a really, really entertaining ball game because desperation has set in, really, I think, on both sides. Wake to win and NC State. I got to be honest with you. A loss by NC State and the way the other games may play tonight may put the Wolfpack in a position where they have to get to Saturday in order to get in the NCAA tournament, let alone try to get to the semis on Friday night and bust up the top four.
You know Wes Durham from the ACC Network, and I want to set something up for Saturday. The ACC Network, they're hosting a watch party on Duke's campus. This is going to be at Devil's Craft House starting at noon on Saturday, and it's going to be ahead of the big game Duke-North Carolina meeting again after that classic in Chapel Hill over a month ago. So if you're going to the game or just are around and want to see some folks from the ACC Network, it is at the Devil's Craft House starting at noon on Saturday ahead of Duke and North Carolina. Wes, do you remember the first time you went to a Duke Carolina game?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What game was that?
8 points in 17 seconds.
That was your first one?
Yep. Pretty good, right?
That's not bad.
I went to games, but I didn't go to a lot of games until I was beyond the age of six on a regular basis. And so the first Duke Carolina game I remember is 8 points in 17 seconds.
That's
1974 when I was 8 years old.
Walter Davis, that's incredible.
Oh, yeah. And after the game, I got Walter Davis's autograph. And somebody said, that's unbelievable. And I later found out that I was one of the few guys, I was one of his first autographs. He told my dad, like, months later, you know, Hey, by the way, I didn't realize that was your son last year after the Duke game. That was one of the first autographs I had.
It's a really neat moment to honor Walter Davis and his Hall of Fame induction in Carmichael when they played Wofford in December. That was a really neat thing to see.
Yeah, no, he's as good as it gets, and a marvelous pro career and just a super guy. And if I'm forced to recall my favorite players as a kid, he's on the list. I mean, he's one of my top three. As a kid growing up, he was one of my top three Carolina players of all time.
Before I let you go, see, you do all this stuff for the ACC again. Watch him on Friday, NC State, Wake Forest, and we're going to see you at the ACC tournament as well in Greensboro next week.
Yeah, we're going to be there Friday morning, Josh, with the show, and then we're going to be there all next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, somewhere in the Coliseum, and hopefully before the session starts, people will be able to come in. And by the way, no dogs. It's amazing I have to say that.
Can't beat Chester and Fuller?
Yeah, no, they're ordinances, I'm sure, public building and everything. We're excited to be there. We're looking forward to being there, and I'm getting to do a game with Corey Alexander on Tuesday night and even a couple on Thursday for ESPN Radio, so I'm excited to do that too.
What quarterback story intrigues you the most this offseason, since you're also the voice of the Atlanta Falcons in the division, Cam Newton? It's the big question. Is Carolina going to completely move on after getting parting ways with Greg Olsen and having Matt Rhule be the head coach? But then, of course, Tom Brady might be the greatest to ever play quarterback, and he's going to be a free agent on March 18th. What are you most intrigued by?
That's a good question. Probably for me, the Tom Brady thing, I just somehow or another, I've heard all this conjecture and so forth that's gone on the last couple of weeks. I still think he ends up in New England, right?
I'd say that's the favorite.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't it be?
Belichick and Brady, the latest news, they called each other last night. They were on the phone.
Great. They exchanged love letters. I mean, stop.
It sounds like this is like they have the relationship between like a dad that's never hugged his son before. That's the relationship they had there where, okay, it's all business here. And now Belichick's trying to, he's being asked to show expression. Hey, express himself. Hey, Brady, we want you back. And Belichick just doesn't know how to do that, I don't think.
There may be a lot of truth to that, but you remember too, it's an organization that has always known when to say goodbye too.
It's true.
I mean, Richard Seymour is the best example of any of it. I am intrigued. You're going to laugh when I tell you this. The Panthers thing doesn't really – I mean, that's going to happen one way or the other, okay? And I hate to say that about Cam, but health has got to be a major concern for David Tepper and for Matt Rhule and Marty Herney, right?
Of course.
So let's acknowledge that. The most intriguing move in the division to me is what's going to happen in Tampa. Because if Bruce Arians – I think if Bruce Arians has his wish, Jameis Winston's gone. Okay, I just think Jameis Winston drives Bruce Arians crazy.
And there are a lot of options who he can replace him with, especially
Philip
with
Rivers
his quarterback
is moving
background.
To Tampa. Philip Rivers is moving to Tampa.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, look, Tampa could be a lot worse than Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers is still got – they need a gunslinger. They don't need a guy who's 30-30. And Winston threw his pick to Deion Jones to end the season last year and became the 30-30 guy. Bruce Arians needs – and Philip Rivers, his interception total is really high, and I'm just using him as an example. But I think what's going to happen in Tampa – look, Breeze is in New Orleans. Ryan's going to be in Atlanta. Who quarterbacks Carolina may not matter because of what they're doing. I think the McCaffrey story, by the way, will be bigger than the Newton story. Mm-hmm. That's just me. I think the Tampa thing becomes – kind of the line item that we need to follow if you're going to follow the NFC South at this point.
West Durham, always tying it back to the ACC. Phillip Rivers being involved with the stuff in Tampa, and he knows where he's on as well.
He moved to Tampa.
Yeah, it's true.
Tiffany and that brood they've got.
They're going to make the great the economy going to be greatly affected by that move.
Free state tax in Florida. Don't ever forget that, Josh. No state tax.
Yeah, that's exactly
Florida,
right.
Florida and Texas and Tennessee, my man.
Wes, have a great broadcast in Greensboro Friday. And then, of course, have a great call for NC State Wake Forest Saturday. And we'll see you all next week at the ACC tournament right here in our backyard.
Sounds great, Josh.
Robert Walsh, what do we got in Take It to the House today?
Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet, eating her curds away. Along came a snake and sat down beside her, and she burned the whole house down in the fray.
Your teases are just so good for this. We take it to the house next.
We're now the opposite of the front of sports talk because we're back to it. Get it?
Well, that's not funny.
Back to the drive.
That's moronic.
With Josh Graham.
We are now being joined by the most recent Tar Heel great to have his name up into the rafters at the Smith Center. It happened last month. It is Joel Berry, who of course plays for the Greensboro Swarm here in the Triad. And Joel, there are a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but let's get to the one most associated with our show. You're going to be in studio with us next Monday to play our assistant producer, Sawyer Dillon, who streams himself playing video games. He beat Chad Ochocinco. No, wait, he tied Chad Ochocinco in FIFA soccer not too long ago. You guys are going to be going head-to-head in studio. Thank you for the time, but how confident are you taking on Sawyer next Monday?
Yes, sir. I'm pretty confident in my game. I show respect to everybody, but I'm pretty confident in what I can do and my ability. So I think I'm ready.
That's a Roy Williams-ism right there, Robert. Respect your opponent. Always do so. I don't know if Sawyer's paying you much respect, though. He's not here today, but he sent us this. He's on the road. I think he's overlooking you. He's in New York just spending time ahead of his big matchup with you on Monday.
Oh, man.
But he sent this in specifically for you.
Hey, what's up, Joel? Looking forward to our game on Monday. I just have one quick question, though. What should the mercy rule be? Because, like, I know if you're down by, like, 25 or 30 in, like, the third quarter, we might want to call it. But it's up to you. I mean, I can run up the score on you, or we can just call it at 20, 15, 10, whatever you're thinking. Also, are we doing three random teams, or are we picking our teams? That's the only other thing I need to know before I get the dub on Monday.
God, he's so awful at talking trash, but how do you respond to that?
Oh, man. I see. He's being a little cocky right now. But you know what? That's good. I like the confidence, so. I'm going to let him have it, but we can follow up on those questions when we see each other in person. But I love the confidence. That'll make me come and play a little bit harder. So,
was there ever a time Joel Berry was a trash talker on the floor?
I'm a pretty quiet guy. If you get up under my skin, then that's one thing. But I usually let my fire come out in my play and I usually stay quiet, but if you rub me the wrong way, then that's when it comes out.
Who's the guy in the ACC you faced that you remember thinking, this guy talks a lot?
The one guy I remember that was very disrespectful to me was I think his name was Josh from Georgia Tech.
Okogie?
I think I might be getting his name wrong. He was a point guard. I think he's still there.
I'll check on that.
But he's a point guard from Georgia Tech, and he went. I think I fell down in the game, and he kind of stepped over me and said something, and that's the kind of thing that ticked me off. So that's the main one that I remember. But everybody else, you know, is just part of the game. You know, it happens, but you know, it got a little disrespectful on his part. So
was it Jose Alvarado?
Yeah, Jose Alvarado, that's who it is. Yes, sir.
All right. See, Jose Alvarado, he's had his fair share of run-ins with a lot of people. In the league, he still plays at Georgia Tech, as you mentioned. Joel Berry is joining us here on Sports Hub Triad. Your guys in Chapel Hill, man, they've won three straight games, beat Wake Forest last night. They're going to be in your town, though, next week. They're going to be playing in the ACC tournament. They got to win the whole damn thing in order to make it to the NCAAs. Do you think your boys are scary next week? You think they're a scary team?
I think they're putting it seems like they're putting it together at the right time. I think that you know, that was always Coach Williams. Always his thing was, you know, in the middle of the season, you're gonna have your ups and downs. You're gonna battle injuries, and but what's most important is trying to put it all together towards the end of the season, and that's when you need to be playing your best basketball. And I think they're starting to come together as a team. Coach always said that, you know, you start off the year as a freshman, but once you get towards the end of the season, you're not a freshman anymore. And those excuses that were being used at the beginning don't apply at the end. So I think they're starting to put it together. I think I remember my freshman year, we played on the first day and had to play all the way through the tournament and made it to the last day and ended up losing to Virginia in the championship. So hopefully they can put that same run together, and it seems like they can do that.
It's Joel Berry with us here from the Swarm, former Tar Heel great. I remember last month when your number was being put into the rafters, Roy, he was calling for a microphone as he was walking off of the floor. They wanted to do things quickly. It was halftime of the Duke game, a very important game for the Tar Heels. But Roy wanted to say something, and he grabbed a microphone. He was brief for about 15, 20 seconds, but he said that he called you a rascal. He called you he called you this guy who, I mean, that's a term of endearment. I mean, that's something that I think you learn with Coach Williams. When he calls you a little rascal or somebody who could be a pain in the neck, that's a good thing when Roy Williams is referring to you that way, isn't it?
Right, exactly, yeah. And that's what he always called me. And, you know, the other name he always gave me was Tough Little Nut. And I just think that's because of just how I approached the game and always came and just, you know, brought that toughness to the team. And so it's a great honor to be, you know, called that. I mean, it can be, you know, you can have your opinions about it, but it's an honor when a coach, you know, of his status gives you a name like that.
I don't think when you go on a recruiting visit to a place like North Carolina, you expect to have a banner go up with your name on it. I could be wrong on that because I'm not nearly as talented as you are, but when you see names like Jordan up there and Worthy and Ford and now Barry's up there, I mean, what goes through you as you look up in the rafters that day at halftime of the Duke game and you see your name amongst all those other greats?
Yeah, you know, it kind of hasn't hit me yet, and I don't think it will until I get older and, you know, walk in there one day with and be able to show my kids and, you know, be able to show them that. And but, I mean, the first time I walked in there and I saw that, I just thought it was always cool. And I told myself from that day that I wanted to put my name up there. And, you know, it's a blessing and an honor to be able to be up there with, you know, with Jordan and Phil Ford and Tyler Hansborough. But it's even more of an honor to have the guys that I even played with, like Marcus Page and Justin Jackson, to be up there. So that just goes to show how good of a group we had and the guys that I played with. So it's just a blessing to be up there, and that's just something that I wanted to do, and I was able to accomplish that.
Joel, I'm sure your heart was broken when you saw Trey Jones made the play he made at the end of regulation of that game. But you should know that I've been afflicted with pain because of it too. I lost a bet to somebody who said they could recreate that play in 15 minutes or less, and he did it in 10 minutes and 15 seconds. So yesterday, I finally had the bet completely paid off. I had to put Christmas lights, a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer nose, and a deer antlers on my car for 2 weeks in February because someone recreated that shot. So you're a Tar Heel, and I'm sure that hurts. It hurt me that someone was able to recreate the Trey Jones shot. I got to ask you, though, as a point guard yourself, how many times do you think, if you were given to recreate that play, would it take for you to do it?
Man, I would tell you, I've never seen that. You know, I've seen, you know, guys throw it and it might hit the front and bounce off or they air ball it, but I've never seen a guy hit it off the rim that way and be able to get it back and be able to hit a winning shot. That's something that I don't think I could recreate, and I don't think too many people can do that. So whoever you made that bet with, I think they just got lucky that day, because that was pretty hard.
Last thing for you, B-Dot, he's walking here into the studio now. He does stuff with the Greensboro Swarm, and of course you play for the Swarm. How would you assess his game? Like, how do you think B-Dot would be on the floor? Be honest now. Come on. He doesn't want you to sugarcoat it.
Well, B-Dot kind of reminds me of Will Barton from the Denver Nuggets.
Whoa!
His body type and his face kind of remind me of him, so I think his game would kind of be like that.
His head is now inflated completely. Joel, we look forward to seeing you next Monday in studio. Thanks for doing this.
Yes, sir. I look forward to seeing you guys, and thank you again.
Do we still have Joel Robert? Do we still have him? Because B-Dot, he's walking right in right now, and I don't think he knows who Will Barton is.
Who the hell
is.
I look like? Who is
Robert doesn't. I don't think B-Dot knows who Will Barton is. I remember watching him at Memphis. That guy gets buckets.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's one of the best 6 men in the NBA, isn't he? That's a compliment from Joel. If you're comparing, if he has your game compared to an NBA player, it's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
He had 18 points last night and 5 rebounds.
He had 18?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's me. That's me in the league. I'm giving you 18 and 5.
I think some would say he's a bucket.
He's definitely a bucket. I almost gave you a dub and 5.
We're going to have a lot of fun today, man. This is going to be very fun because North Carolina has won its 3rd in a row.
Woohoo!
B-Dot, he has his message to the Tar Heel Nation, and I'll even bonus it. What type of music should Robert look up for you to have a message to the Winston-Salem State Ram Nation?
Oh, Champions from Kanye West and Dame Dash, and then We Are the Champions. Yeah, let me get that, please.
All right, so we're going to knock both of those out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also, up next, what NBA head coach Tim Duncan looks like and sounds like? Keep it on the drive.
Got it. You're on the drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
B-Dot started just as a fan of this show.
Fact.
Then we had him on a show. Then we started saying, hey, how about we let you come in here every minute, or every hour, I should say, or for an hour once a week. I can talk today.
Yeah.
And now we're at the point he has his own segment that's called B-Dot's Grammar Lesson. And after just a few weeks of doing this, B-Dot, he's now bringing in his own headphones.
Yeah.
And he's bypassing a sign on the studio door that says no food or drink.
Is there a sign there?
Bringing in some Lay's potato chips and a Snapple.
Well, I had the munchies today.
What's your Snapple fact?
It's not a Snapple. It's an Everfresh.
Come on, Josh.
It looks like a Snapple.
I need a fact.
It looks exactly like a Snapple. It's what clearly the hell is Everfresh?
I don't know. I just got it for the fruit.
I bet you it has a fact underneath that cap.
There's nothing underneath the cap.
Damn. All right. Well, I'm sorry to Everfresh. We'll still have you on as a sponsor if you want to.
If you're interested.
Sponsor this segment. B-Dot. This segment, B-Dot's Grammar School this week, is brought to you by Everfresh.
Yeah.
And that's no cap. Just like our facts.
Yeah.
All right. We got too much imaging for this, but some would say just so much, just enough.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking.
In high school, he didn't play sports, but he did wear a helmet.
And just when you think it can't get any worse.
My English teacher wanted to flunk me in junior high.
Damn.
Thanks a lot. Next semester, I'll be 35.
Josh is going to attempt to learn B-Dot's vernacular.
I'm from the old school. I got a street knowledge. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
It's time for B-Dot's Grammar School.
All right, Josh, now we've reviewed words such as cap, which means lie. 12, the police. Dub gave you 3 different meanings for dub last week. This week, your word is a word that was regional, Josh. It was from the New York vernacular. And this word is dead ass. What does dead ass mean?
I think I know this one.
Do you know this one?
I think I know this one.
Okay.
But I'm willing to hear some clues.
Yeah.
336-777-1600. What does dead ass mean?
Now listen, as you're calling up, understand this, Josh. Again, dead ass was a regional word that came down from the north. It is also an exclamation added when you add the letter B to the end of dead ass. So if you have dead ass B.
Oh, is there a word that B stands
for? Nope. B is just the exclamation point from the north, from the up north verbiage and slang jargon.
I got it.
Yeah. Like, what's up, B? And dead ass, B.
I feel less confident than I just felt a moment ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to steal your confidence there.
777-1600. Robert, do you have a hint?
Look, Monday, Joel is going to beat Sawyer so bad. Dead ass.
There we go, Rob.
How do you think that game's going to go?
Oh, man. I agree 100% with Rob. Yeah, Sawyer's going to get his ass whipped. Dead ass.
I think Sawyer's going to win.
Do you?
Dead ass.
Nice cap.
Okay, you kind of used it right, but that's only because you like said the same thing I said. So, like,
dead ass, B.
Now, when you throw the B on there, I'm telling you, that's
slowly morphing.
You know what? You used it so right that I didn't even realize you were using it. It was just so correct.
I'm pretty good. I think this is an easy one. I don't even think I need any help. I'm good. Just going to knock it out. You ready? Dead ass means serious, man. I'm dead ass.
Very serious. Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you put that B at the end, then you're very serious. And you mean like, listen, Sawyer's going to get drug Monday, and I'm dead ass, B.
Oh, okay.
You see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's hear the sentence. I'm very excited to see.
I am. Is this going to be a tease for the next segment, or are you just going to give us a sentence?
No. I'm going to do something here.
Okay.
I'm going to tease ahead.
Okay.
Wes Durham. He's going to be joining our show in an hour. That guy is the most smart analyst on all of ACC basketball. Dead ass, B.
Yeah. And it just flows the dead assness. I like the way you roll with that. Yeah.
All right, so that's PDOT's grammar school. Yeah. Here's another thing we need to figure out, and maybe the audience can help us out on this. We gave BDOT a credential for the ACC tournament next week.
Yes, and I'm so thankful. Thank you very much to the Sports Hub Triad and to Jenny and, of course, to you, Josh.
Right. So what is BDOT going to do for us? Like, what are we having BDOT there for?
That's a good point.
Like, BDOT's going to help us on Wednesdays. He's going to do grammar school with us.
Yeah.
But what is he going to do Tuesday and Thursday and Friday?
Good point.
I feel like the best way to use him would be in the least formal situation possible. So maybe you could be like the locker room correspondent.
Oh, yeah.
And you're in there. Like, Josh will be a little more respectful and not really push buttons, but I feel like that's
something. BDOT's wanting to ask Roy Williams questions.
Yeah, I want to ask everybody questions.
Yeah. I don't know about that, man.
Yeah, what do you mean you don't know about that? Like, listen, I want to go and ask the questions that you're too scary to ask, Josh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask those questions under the Sports Hub Triad.
That's what I'm worried about.
No, I'm excited. That's
Roy Williams never going to come on your radio show again. Why?
Why wouldn't he?
Because BDOT asked this question.
Oh, come on.
Coach K is not coming on the show. Why? Because BDOT went in there and said, you ain't got bleep, Coach K.
Let me ask
you. I was getting there.
I'm sorry to me to take your fire.
Damn it, Rob. Wait, am I unable to be a fan of a team if I'm working for Sports Hub Triad?
When you're probably below the arena. Yeah. Like when you're in the locker rooms and such. Probably.
I can't be fans?
Probably.
I can't be a fan. I can be a fan of different players though. Like
that works.
If we're talking to Miami, I like Chris Likes. Like that's my guy. Like so when I see him,
The formality of a press conference. That is a worrisome place.
What do you mean? You don't trust me? Is it because I'm
no.
black? I'm telling you, man, I've been in press conferences before. And listen, they don't scare me. And everybody's in there all emotional.
No, I'm not.
So Coach K.
I'm not worried. I'm not worried about you. I'm just saying that there is very little comedy that happens in those circumstances.
Exactly.
Like
that's
in my circumstance.
I'm not there.
Last year, I remember Coach K just dunking on me.
See?
Asking Zion or RJ rating a dunk or something.
And that wasn't I became a fan damn near then because that's the question that people want to know.
I think you do your most damage in the locker rooms.
Okay.
Just because. No. You can do whatever you want at the press conference.
Ban me to the outhouse. Ban me to the out. Hey, take this back to the 1800s. I'm not good enough to come into the main room. You can go underneath in the bellows and talk to the guys down there who look like you. But no, not the coaches. You know what, man? Your audience calls
us. Yeah, you can ask Leonard Hamilton questions. That's it. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, your audience calls up talking, we don't like this B-Dot when he comes on the air. Then you tell me I can't talk to – what's going on around here?
No, I didn't say you couldn't. I'm just saying this is something – we need to figure out what your role is going to be. If it is in the press conferences, okay.
Robert, I like the locker room.
Robert, what's your thought? Should we have B-Dot asking everybody questions?
I think he can do whatever he wants to. He's already showing up. We get him a credential. I mean, and this is his first time. He's never going to get better if you don't give him a shot.
Thanks, Rob.
I got your back, man.
That's my guy. How professional I held myself at the ACC Media Day? Did you see me? I had on hard bottoms and stuff.
Yeah, you did.
Not wearing it next week, though.
What are you wearing next week?
Wouldn't you like to know as I drink my Everfresh?
Yeah. What kind of Lay's potato chips do you have here?
That was a new flavor that I wasn't really familiar with, so
sweet,
I just jumped out there.
Southern Heat Barbecue.
Mm-hmm. Don't toss my bag like that. Were you not impressed with Sweet Southern Heat Barbecue?
No, it looks good. Mm. Looks good. So next week's going to be a lot of fun. We need to figure out what exactly your role is going to be, though.
I am interested.
I will tell you this. In all honesty, the best stuff comes out of the locker room because you can just walk up to anybody.
Yeah.
Right?
I have no problem doing that.
Press conference. Got to raise your hand, get a microphone, come over to you. Yeah, and we're going to go over here. What's your name and affiliation?
That's why I hate that room, man. It's always so awkward. Why did y'all have that awkward stench in there? Like, everybody's scared to say something. Like, I've only heard a laugh in there maybe twice in my whole life of going to press conferences. Mm. Why is it such a scary vibe, this weird place to be?
It is a weird vibe.
It is.
So I tried to change that a little bit.
You see, that's why you need me. The yin to your yang. I'm telling you, man. We could get in there, do the kid and play dance in front of everybody. They wouldn't know what hit them.
I would love to watch the Rush Hour movie that you two would put on. That would be, but it's like Rush Hour of sports.
Why did you make me Jackie Chan? Oh, wait, maybe B-Dot's Jackie Chan.
No.
I could be Chris Tucker.
Nah.
No, let's. Or we can do 48 hours. We
there
can do 48 hours.
There you go.
You're Nick Nolte. Dead ass.
Yeah, dead ass. I should probably get this.
Sorry.
I need to get this.
Sorry.
B-Dot, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming up, why it wouldn't surprise me for the Panthers to go quarterback at number 7. Dead ass.
Oh, my God. Will you stop this narrative of the Panthers getting rid of Cam Newton? I'm so sick of you with this, Josh. Every day you kick Cam further and further out of Charlotte, and it is starting to pee me off. Dead ass, B.
This is The Drive.